Today we begin a new sermon series through the Easter season, and sermon series is This Is Us. You may have heard of a television show by the same name. That's where I got the title. It's an American drama that's taken place over the last 18 months or so, season two, I think they're in. It traces the life over about 30 years of three triplets. Well, they're not quite triplets. There's two twins, and then there's an adopted child, one black child and two white children, and they grow up together as siblings, and it's the story of their lives. It's emotionally compelling, and if you look at some of the trailers and so on, people are drawn to the story because it seems to speak to their lives today. So it's getting favorable reviews. I think it's won some awards. So This Is Us, based on the readings from the Acts of the Apostle. It's not easy to say, Acts, A-C-T-S. But you'll find it right after Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And throughout April and May, we'll be looking at the Acts. And I have included them in the orange update for April. If you'd like to read ahead for the following weeks, you'll see those coming up. Today we're looking at Acts chapter 4. From the point of view that this is us, meaning this is our history of our family, how the Jewish family, who are followers of Jesus, started out life in those early days, right through, as we trace through some of the readings from Acts, right through today here at Christ Church, this is us. There's some more engaging reason than just sort of exploring history, however, or looking at our contemporary situation. Our spiritual identity in the risen Christ mixes joy and sorrow, faith and doubt. A new identity, a new life that no one can take from us, not even computer hackers. And this is more important than we know. We're going to explore that part of it a little bit. And here's my goal. My goal for this series with you is that we will grow in faith as bold believers. We will grow in faith as bold believers. It's, again, probably more important than you realize. So thank you for that. So that's a photograph taken at my installation. A good friend of mine, Pastor Martin Spolstra, who's from Bowmanville Church, he came and read one of the lessons during my installation back on the 28th of January. So thank you, Peter. Paul wrote to the Romans, chapter 1, verse 16, these words, "I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for those who believe." I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for those who believe. Romans 1, 16. People are united as they watch the This Is Us TV series, but I think even as we engage in the scripture, people are united by a sense of grief and loss. Have you ever lost your wallet, your keys, your eyeglasses? That may be more panic than sadness, but you want to get it back again. But on another level, there's something called, you've heard of this, identity theft? I don't hope no one here has had that issue. The loss of one's credit and personal health information, and we feel a terrible sense of loss for that reason, but also on another level, we feel a sense of loss for people we don't even know, whether it's identity theft, or in the case of the terrible news from Saskatchewan. It's just bowling me over. These kids on a school bus going to a hockey game, 15 of them, I think, were killed on Humboldt, Saskatchewan. At the 9:15 service, there's a gentleman in the choir who is one of the sponsors or works with local Kiwanis Music Festival. There was a special stage built for the Kiwanis Music Festival here in Oshawa, and people from Humboldt made it. So he had the contact information for that person, phoned that person, and told them the Christ Church would be praying for the folks from Humboldt. So when we get to the prayers of the people, I'm sure we will remember that, and I hope you will, after such a terrible sense of loss. People we don't even know, but we feel drawn into praying for and having a connection with these people. And we want to be able to help others to mitigate the loss, to know people that they're not alone. I would like to suggest that something is equally compelling and engaging is there in the gospel reading from John that we feel for Thomas. We feel for Thomas, who's not there on that first Easter morning. And let me suggest to you, as perhaps you may have considered, that his doubt, let's face it, we call him Doubting Thomas, but it isn't just an intellectual doubt. I'm guessing that his doubt really goes to a deeper place in his life, that he was so connected to and engaged with Jesus that when he dies in a horrific way on the cross, that he's just hurt so badly that he just can't face it. He doesn't want to believe that the other disciples have seen him. He doesn't want to have to go through that pain again, perhaps being disappointed or that they're delusional. So here is a week later, which is today is, right? A week after Easter. Here he is in the room, hoping against hope that maybe it is true. But he gets there. The doors are locked. There's no Jesus. But despite the doors being locked, Jesus shows up. And he's there in the room, and instead of that tremendous sense of hurt and loss, he's able to say, "My Lord and my God." He moves from that place of hurt, not just intellectual though, but a place of hurt, into another place, a place of affirmation of faith. If you have any intellectual doubts or questions, let's honor them. Let's deal with them. Send me an email. Let's have a conversation. Come to the men's Bible study. Let's wrestle these things out. Skeptics are welcome. Doubters are welcome. Thomas was welcome. So are you. You have a mind. Use it. But my sense is, at least from Thomas's point of view, and maybe from yours, that sometimes the reason we hold back from saying, "My Lord and my God," is because it comes from another place. It comes from a place of hurt or disappointment or something we may not even have identified that is very deep. Jesus wants to minister to that place in your life. Jonathan Edwards, a great preacher, a sermon, I want to quote a little bit of his message. He said, "Most of us experience our losses slowly over the span of a lifetime until we find ourselves on the door of death, leaving everything behind. Catastrophic loss of definition, by definition, precludes recovery. It will transform us or destroy us. It will never leave us the same. There is no going back to the past. It is not therefore true that we become less through loss," listen to this, "unless we allow the loss to make us less, grinding our soul down to nothing left." So loss can make us less, or loss can make us more. One last quote from Jerry Stiller. "I did not get over the loss of my loved ones. Rather, I absorbed the loss into my life until it became part of who I am. Sorrow took up permanent residence in my soul and enlarged it. One learns the pain of others by suffering one's own pain, by turning inside oneself, by finding one's own soul. However painful, sorrow can be good for the soul." Listen to this last part. "The soul is elastic like a balloon. It can grow larger through suffering." This is us. Am I right? We're no strangers to some of these matters that are deep in our lives. How can we see God enlarging our soul through these losses? Now, in the Acts reading, the early believers' sense of loss over Jesus' death and their grief and guilt by association with his death is ameliorated as they listen. As they listen and believe that Jesus is alive, Peter and the other apostles give witness to Jesus' resurrection. Can you imagine being in the presence of Peter? Or listen to the John passage from 1 John chapter 1. "What I have seen and what I have touched, this I proclaim to you." I mean, we're listening to eyewitnesses telling us about Jesus. It's very exciting. I don't know how people don't get started crying when they read the word or when they think about what they've been through. Because just getting back for Thomas for just a second, when Thomas thought about his own pain and he saw the mark of the nails in his hands and he saw what was in the side of Jesus, Thomas began to realize that his own sense of loss by comparison with Jesus was much less. And so that's why he humbled himself. Keeping our eyes on Jesus and what he's been through, both for the acts in their audience and in Thomas's Easter morning audience, is a beautiful way of us being able to better appreciate what he's gone through for us. Now, the response to this from the first believers, did you catch this part? The response for the first believers was a number of people sold their property and they dropped the proceeds of that sale at the feet of the wardens, the feet of the apostles. And that's no subliminal, you know, just forget I said that. And a guy named Barnabas does the same thing. He's not called Barnabas, he's originally called Joseph, and then he's from Cyprus, he has some excess property. This is about 60 AD, so life is not great, but it's bearable anyway. So this money is given to the apostles, they're able to share with the poor, because the people who are economically challenged are just as much believers as the people who are economically advantaged, and so they want to be able to share. And they do. But it's kind of short-sighted. A little bit. Because 10 years on, the people of Jerusalem, people of faith, whether Jewish or Christian, they are being overrun by the Romans, and they're basically kicked out of Jerusalem, and they're part of the diaspora, they're part of God's plan. Good thing they sold the property while it still had some value. So in 70 AD... their property was confiscated rather than being able to sell it. But in any case, we hear Paul say on a number of occasions he's collecting money to send it back to where? Back to Jerusalem, because there's a bunch of poor people who need the support. Maybe if they hadn't sold the property. But anyway, they're keeping their eyes on Jesus and wanted to do the right thing at the time, and it certainly seemed like the right thing to do, giving over their, a number of people being able to give over their property and their sales to the work of the early church. So just getting back to this giving up private information, and I wonder, you don't have to have a show of hands, but I wonder some people here who have a points card or for a gas station or a drugstore or a grocery store or a credit card that gets points. So you're agreeing to corporate policies in order to freely being able to gain these points. And perhaps you also have agreed to on your phone, Google or Snapchat or Instagram, you're agreeing, oh yes, oh yeah, yeah. Scroll through, agree, and away you go. You have free use of these. What's happening to your data? It's being mined by some artificial intelligent machine or other. So wherever we shop, whenever we shop, how much we spend, where we spend it, a wonderful little dossier is being prepared just for you so that they can then target you and send back more information about you to get you to buy more things because they know where you shop and how much you spend and where you go and if it's on a Friday night or whatever. So this kind of information, as you know, can be tracked, analyzed, and can be targeted. This amount of personal information held by corporations about our personal habits exposes us to our vulnerabilities, let's say. And we may not realize the full extent of that vulnerability. The consequences of identity fraud are frustrating, terrifying, and costly to all. Stolen identities end up being used in the world of financial system, I didn't know this, to fund terrorism, human trafficking, drug cartels, and money laundering, and this is no joke. Okay, bad news. That's the bad news. Just one little statistic. Facebook estimates that 622,161 users in Canada had their data improperly shared with a political consultancy firm that may have supported a major political win in Great Britain. You didn't know that, did you? Okay. What's my sermon title? This is us. This is us. This is us in our humanity. We want convenience. We want the card, you know. We want the points. We want the earthly things. We want to get by. We're struggling. We need help, whatever it might be. Maybe we don't struggle. We just like the game of it. This is us. This is Anglicans. This is North Americans. But this is us. You're here on a Sunday morning, April the 8th, 2018. What are you doing here in a church? Are you going to say the creed with some kind of veracity? I believe in God the Father. I believe in Jesus. I believe in the Holy Spirit. And the implications of that, certainly in those early days, was a tremendous, they shared everything they have. I barely know your names. They shared everything they have. I know that's an ideal, but this church wouldn't be here for the last 90 years plus a few months. Wouldn't be here except there is some sense of that ideal that people are willing to share to make something happen here through this place and through all the other 200 churches in the Diocese of Toronto or all the other churches in 50 plus churches in Oshawa. People still have some sense that good can happen when we worship. This is us too. That the world doesn't have to have the final say about our points or non-points or identity or non-identity. That's why it's so important, and I hope you're listening to me on this, my last point here, that our spiritual identity, who we are in Christ, makes a difference. If you're sure of that, not because of your feelings, yes, there might be some doubts, but because of God's grace in the resurrection of Christ. I didn't make it up. This is us. We want to be bold as believers, not back pew, you know, sitting in the back of our, it's just in the back of our mind. We want to be bold believers. Yeah, maybe we need to check our password and our PIN and be careful about the stewardship of the things that we have and the cards that we have and not be frightened about those things. But maybe we not need to be frightened about our faith and to take the safeguards and the protection necessary to say, I am a believer. I am not, as Paul with Paul say, I am not ashamed of the gospel. Because it is the power, who doesn't want that? Because it is the power of those who believe. One last question. When Barnabas shows up, he's called Barnabas because it means Bar-Nabas, son of encouragement. It's a Jewish word. Bar, you've heard of bar mitzvah? Bar, what's the other one? Bar bat mitzvah for the girls? So bar mitzvah means, Bar-Nabas means son of encouragement. So he's called a new name because he's encouraged, because he's made a financial donation. But you know what? I don't think it's just because of his financial donation that he's encouraging them. Do you know what I think really encourages them? His attitude. He cares about them. Whether it's a small amount or a little amount, he cares. And you'll see Barnabas later in a few weeks when we talk about St. Paul. So the question is, who has been an encouragement for you? Who's been an encouragement for you? Has it been a song? Has it been a pastor? Has it been a Sunday school teacher? Is it someone listening to the radio? Anybody went to see the movie? I Can Only Imagine. We saw that Friday night. I Can Only Imagine. It's about a song. You know the song? Do we sing that here? I Can Only Imagine. Some of you will know it. Anyway, amazing transformation happens in the life of the father. They had no idea. But it was a song that got him through. It was an Amy Grant song, I think, Diane, wasn't it? Amy Grant song. Mercy Me. Mercy Me. Yeah, it was the name of the band, yeah. Anyway, so who's been encouragement to you? What was it they did, said? Was it a song? So for me to ask you that question, but I will answer it myself as I wind up here. Bob Hartley. Does that name ring a bell? Some of you will know Bob Hartley. He was a pastor here. He was an associate priest, I think, alongside of his Bruce McCallum and Chris Williams. These are priests that I've known who are kind of like giants in the faith for me. Like, I can't believe I'm in this parish because I think about what their ministry accomplished. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to be here. So Bob Hartley has been an encouragement for Diane and I. He conducted the wedding for our wedding. So not here, but Diane's church in Lindsay. So who has been an encouragement to you? And the flip side of that, of course, is it may be that you could be, or maybe you are, an encouragement to somebody else. You are an encourager. You are a Barnabas to somebody else. And maybe this week is your week to do that, to be an encourager for someone else. Because if this is us, we're not just pulled down by the weight of the world. We are lifted up by the glory of the risen Christ. And we can keep that focus in our mind as we receive and give encouragement. Let's be that kind of people at Christ Church. This is us. Thanks be to God.